Okay, so I want you to picture this scene. We're in Finland. It's the dead of winter.
And when you say winter in Finland, we're not talking about, a light dusting of snow.
No, not at all. We're talking about that deep Nordic kind of winter that just gets in your bones. It's dark, it's icy, and in front of this massive, imposing wooden door stand, two young American men.
It's a very cinematic image. You have these two guys, they're in suits, probably shivering, and they're holding these heavy 16-millimeter film reels.
They look completely out of place. And this door, it's the entrance to a national penitentiary.
Right.
They knock. A little viewing slot slides open, just like in the movies. They try to make their case to whoever's behind it, and
It
slam!
just shuts on them.
Voice just yells out, "Minke pois!"
Which means go away.
Exactly. Go away. And that's it. They're just left standing there in the cold.
And it feels like the end of the scene, doesn't it? I mean, the doors close, the rejection is absolute, but this is actually where our deep dive begins today.
It really is.
Because that rejection, it isn't the end. It's actually the setup for, well, one of the most improbable plot twists I've ever come across in our research.
I agree. Because the very next day, a chance meeting with a complete stranger leads to this two-word bombshell that changes absolutely everything. Olin Pomo.
I am the boss.
I am the boss. So today we're doing a deep dive into the personal journals of Darwin Rasmussen, specifically his time as a missionary in Finland. We have these incredible excerpts covering two distinct stories.
One is called the Riihimäki Miracle, and the other is Miracle with an Army Captain.
And while on the surface these are missionary stories, the mission for our deep dive today is much broader.
Exactly. We're looking at the mechanics of influence, the ripple effect, how
Yeah.
these tiny, seemingly insignificant interactions, a dinner with a kid 27 years ago, or just sharing a table in a bar can literally unlock an entire city.
It's like the chaos theory of kindness. One small act, massive consequences down the line.
But before we get to the warden and the captain, we need to set the scene. Where are we in Rasmussen's timeline? Okay, so we're in Finland, pretty late into his mission. Darwin Rasmussen has spent the first 20 months up north in the Oulu zone.
Northern Finland.
Yeah, and he talks about it with real affection in the source material. He mentions the Revongelet, the Northern Lights, and the reindeer. He'd gotten used to the people who he describes as reserved, but, very kind-hearted.
He calls it home. He says the light never felt the same anywhere else. It sounds rugged, but beautiful.
It does. But then he gets the transfer. He's sent south to a town called Riihimäki.
And this is a big deal for him.
It's a huge deal. Riihimäki is described as a town that hadn't had missionaries for a while. So for Rasmussen, psychologically, this is really tough. He feels like he's leaving home to start all over again in what's known as a hard area.
He does have a new companion, right? Barry Kuzmanen.
Yes, who's described as cheerful and steady, which I'm sure helped. But yeah, they're essentially breaking new ground.
They're starting from zero. And it sounds like they were really hustling. The text says they bartered painting a room in exchange for rent. They were trying to be part of the community.
They were. But let's look at that first ripple. It doesn't start with a big sermon. It starts with something totally mundane.
A hamburger run. Hampurilainen.
Yes. And this incident is so important because it highlights this concept we talk about in psychology called signaling. So one night, Darwin and Vali are at a kiosk and they see a man slip on the ice.
A bad fall.
A really bad fall. He's bleeding, he's moaning. Now, this is a moment where the bystander effect usually kicks in, right? It's freezing, you just want to get your food and go home.
You assume someone else will handle it.
Precisely, but they don't. They rush over, they put a coat under his head, get someone to call the police, and they wait with him. They stay in that uncomfortable moment.
And they probably thought nothing of it, just, being a decent human.
Right. They think it's just a good deed done in the dark. But here's the key. The next day, they're knocking on doors in an apartment building, and a woman invites them in. Why?
She saw them.
She was watching from her window. She saw them help that man.
That's fascinating. It's that idea that character is what you do when you think no one's watching, except in a city, someone is almost always watching.
Exactly. It's a credibility signal. In a town where they're strangers, that one act, which they thought went unnoticed, it literally opened a door for them. It established them as good actors.
Okay, so that's the first small ripple. But then they decide to get ambitious.
Very ambitious. Their mission president, President Wade, gives them two films to use. And the choices are, well, they're interesting.
Yeah, they're a little unique.
One is called Run, Dick, Run, Jane.
Which sounds like a kid's book.
It's actually a BYU production about a man finding physical and spiritual renewal through running. The other is a basketball game that features a big Finnish star player.
Okay, so running and basketball. And they think, who can we show these to? And their first thought is the National Penitentiary.
250 hardened criminals. It's an unbelievably audacious target.
Which brings us right back to that opening scene. They knock on the big wooden door. The slot opens. Mita Halliwad, what do you want?
They explain, and bam, minke poa.
It's a crushing rejection. Rasmussen says in his journal he walked away feeling foolish. Like, what were we even thinking?
It's that moment where ambition meets a very hard reality.
But, and this is the pivot, they don't give up. The very next day, they're back to the daily grind, just knocking on doors.
And this is where the story just gets wild. They meet a man, mid-30s, warm, invites them in, and they start chatting.
And they tell him about the prison failure. Probably is a funny story, right?
I think so, yeah, to build some rapport. You won't believe what we tried to do!
Yeah.
And the guy is amused. But then he asks a really specific question. He asks what films they wanted to show.
That is a weird detail to focus on.
Isn't it? And when they tell him about the running movie and the basketball game, he smiles. And then he says something that must have sounded completely insane.
What's that?
He says, go back tomorrow. The warden will let you in.
I mean, how could he possibly know that? You'd think he was pulling their leg.
Exactly. And that's when he drops the line.
Olin Palmo.
I am the boss.
He's the warden. The odds of that are just astronomical.
You're knocking on random doors and you just happen to find the one man whose institution rejected you the day before.
So they go back. Back to the massive wooden door. The slot opens, then shuts. But this time,
the whole door swings open, and there's their new friend, the warden.
It just completely changes the power dynamic. They're not beggars anymore.
They're invited guests.
And the scene inside the prison, Rasmussen paints a very vivid picture.
Oh, yeah. It's not a cozy movie night. It's a huge hall, long wooden benches and armed guards lining the walls. The tension must have been palpable.
But then they play the basketball film.
And sports becomes the great unifier. The inmates are cheering for the Finnish player. The entire atmosphere shifts from hostile to camaraderie.
It broke the ice. But then they take a huge risk at halftime.
A huge risk. They don't just change the reels. They stand up and give a 5-minute presentation on the first vision, the core of their spiritual message.
To a captive audience who just wants to see the rest of the game, you'd expect them to get heckled.
But Rasmussen says the room went totally silent. A profound peace just settled over this really unlikely place. It's such a powerful contrast. Armed guards and a message of peace.
But the story doesn't even stop there.
Yeah.
This is where the ripple effect just explodes.
That's a great way to put it, because the boss, the Gordon, he isn't done. The next day, they go to thank him, and he just asks, do you want to show the films at the grade school?
And of course, they say yes.
Then the high school, then the university. Because of this one man's endorsement, his social capital, they end up presenting to nearly 2,000 students.
The whole town basically opens up to them.
The whole town.
Okay, so this is the part I really want to dig into. Why? Why did this powerful man go to such great lengths for two random guys he just met? It seems like a massive risk for him.
You're asking the exact right question. And the answer is the absolute heart of this whole story. When they asked him, his answer had nothing to do with them. It went back 27 years.
27 years.
Yeah. The warden explained that when he was an 8-year-old boy in Helsinki, his best friends were American children. And he used to eat dinner at their house all the time.
So he had this positive association with Americans from his childhood.
It was deeper than that. He said the family was so kind and loving, they treated him like one of their own. And as a little boy, he made a vow to himself.
What was the vow?
That someday he would repay that kindness to an American.
Wow. So he was just waiting for almost 30 years.
Waiting for his moment. And here's the final piece that ties it all together. That family who fed him all those years ago.
Who were they?
It was the family of Henry A. Mattis.
Wait, that name sounds familiar.
It should. Henry A. Mattis was the first mission president of the Finnish mission.
No way.
Yes. So look at that chain of events. The kindness of the first mission president's family plants the seed in a neighborhood kid. The seed lies dormant for 27 years, and when Rasmussen and Kuzmanen knock on his door, it's harvest time.
That is just unbelievable. He didn't walk into a miracle. He walked into a story that was written a generation before he was even born.
Exactly. And Rasmussen admits in his journal he didn't even realize the full scope of it at the time. It wasn't until decades later, rereading his own words, that he connected all the dots.
It wasn't about his skill or his language ability.
It was about a harvest of seeds someone else had planted.
It makes you rethink what success even means. Mm-hmm. We want results now. But sometimes the groundwork was laid by a dinner party 3 decades ago.
And it suggests that no act of kindness is ever truly wasted. It's just that you might not be the one to see the return on investment.
You might be planting trees you'll never sit under. Okay, so that's the high of the story.
Yeah.
But the source material gives us another one from the end of his mission that's much quieter and maybe a lot more painful.
Yes. The miracle with an army captain. This happens in his final month. He and Vailey are eating in a small bar, a bar.
The setting is important. It's not a church. It's a bar. And a man with a cigarette walks up to their table and asks if he can join them.
And Rasmussen is incredibly honest here about his first reaction. He judged him hard. His first thought was, can't he sit anywhere else? He saw the cigarette, the bar setting, and he just categorized him. He thought, this guy isn't interested in what we have to say.
He judged the smoker by the cigarette.
Right. And Rasmussen says he's regretted that thought his entire life. Because as soon as the man sat down, that judgment was just shattered.
Who was he?
An army captain. Handsome, looked successful on the outside, but he confessed that he was deeply, profoundly lonely. He said, no friends, nobody to trust.
Wow.
And then he tells them something that must have floored them. He had read the entire Book of Mormon.
He had already read it.
All of it. But he didn't understand it. He needed it explained. And then he says, I will put my whole life into your hands so you can teach me the gospel.
That's an incredibly vulnerable thing to say to two strangers.
It's a desperate plea for connection. He told them that sitting with them made him feel good all over, that there was something real he could hold on to.
But the tragedy is the timing.
It is. Dinner ended. Rasmussen had to leave for Helsinki that week to fly home. He never saw the man again.
So it's unresolved.
Completely unresolved. He hopes Veli taught him, but he just doesn't know.
What a stark contrast to the warden's story.
It really is. I mean, think about it. The warden was a prepared person who looked successful and wore a suit. The army captain was also a prepared person, but he looked rough and had a cigarette in his hand.
And Rasmussen almost missed the second one because of his own internal bias.
That's the lesson, isn't it? The first door opened because of a past kindness. The second door almost stayed shut because of a present judgment. It challenges you to look past the costume people are wearing.
Both were miracles, just in very different ways.
And both required a connection. The warden needed that link to his childhood. The captain just needed the proximity of two kind men in a bar to feel safe enough to open up.
So bringing it all together, what does this tell us?
I think it gives us a complete picture of influence. You have the long game, the Mattis family. They just fed a kid. They never saw the results. Their ripple traveled through time.
And on the other hand,
you have the immediate messy moment in the bar. That ripple is about having empathy right now, suppressing that instinct to judge so you don't miss the miracle sitting right in front of you.
Rasmussen's regret is so palpable in the text. It's a real warning.
It is. Don't let the cigarette or the tattoos or the bad clothes or whatever our modern equivalent is blind you to the person right there.
The miracles weren't magic. They were just human connection.
Yes. Forged in the moment or forged a generation ago. But they all required someone to just engage with another person.
So what's the takeaway for all of us, you know, just living our normal lives? We aren't knocking on prison doors in Finland.
I think it raises this profound question about our hidden impact. We think our daily interactions are trivial. A polite nod, sharing a meal, listening to a stranger.
We think, this doesn't matter. This isn't changing the world.
But this story suggests otherwise. If a dinner with an 8-year-old boy can unlock a prison 27 years later, what are you doing today that might be planting a seed for a future you will never, ever see?
That's a wild thought.
We're constantly planting seeds, and we may never see them harvest. We might be the modest family in someone else's story, but that doesn't mean the seeds aren't growing.
Well, so that stranger who interrupts your lunch.
They might just be the protagonist of a story that hasn't been written yet, and you might be the plot twist they need. Hmm. Or maybe they're the plot twist you need if you just let them sit down.
I love that. You might be the plot twist.
Yeah.
Well, that's all the time we have for this deep dive into Darwin Rasmussen's journals. A huge thank you to the source material for reminding us that the biggest miracles often have the smallest, most human beginnings.
And that you never know when you're talking to the boss.
So true. Thanks for listening, everyone. Keep your eyes open for those ripples. We'll catch you next time.